Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And you join us for a chat about Land Rovers and everything to do with owning them. What have you been up to then?
Me?
Yeah.
Loads.
Loads?
Yeah.
Oh, that's unusual for you.
Yeah, actually, no, not really. No, I've been there. As you know, the Project 90 is moving on.
Well, we spoke about it with Greg, didn't we? The engine box are now in. But you've had a bit of a dilemma, haven't you? Because the wiring has been the next port of call to sort of ponder, I suppose.
Yeah, so I know very little about wiring. And the old loom is still on the old bulkhead. And as regular listeners will know, I've got a new bulkhead on its way.
Yeah.
And when that arrives, and I finally choose the colour to be painted, I want to take some bits off that bulkhead, like steering column, etc.
Yeah.
So the current wiring loom's still there, and it looks bad.
Well, it's been, that bulkhead's been, like you say, under a cover, but it's sort of been exposed. Yeah. All the connectors have been like insulated or covered in grease or anything, have they? So
some of the outer casing of the wires, you know, when they go brittle, when they bend, you get little like hairline cracks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a recipe for a fire or disaster. I had a really interesting chat yesterday with our friends at AutoSparks.
Oh, yeah.
Don't know if you've ever spoken to them.
I have, yeah.
What's really useful with those guys is they've got their help desk. And I was speaking to a chap called Craig. Because I've got an early 90, but I've also got a later TDI engine.
Yes.
It's kind of like, which one do you buy? Really, really interesting. So always choose the loom, the main loom, that goes with the original chassis number, unless there's going to be any significant changes. There are not. And then, because I've got a 300 TDI engine, there's four options. I think it was, there's like loads of options for the main loom, but for the engine loom, there were like four options.
Yeah.
Under the 200 TDI, because the connectors for the 200 TDI match up to the early 90 loom.
Got you.
The 300 loom is different.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a very similar engine. So that was really useful. So I now know what I need. So there's three parts to the loom, the main harness, the engine loom, and from the chassis.
Yeah.
What do you call that? The rear loom?
Chassis loom. That's the only one loom I ended up replacing on the Series 3. But actually, I will be doing a main loom on that at some point as well, for the same reason that you've decided to do it on your rebuild. It's very, very crispy and a little bit borderline.
So I have made the decision to make another purchase.
Yeah. I think it's the right decision.
Not the cheapest thing to do by any stretch of the imagination. We're probably talking just over £1,100.
God, yeah.
Which is a lot, isn't it? It is a lot of money.
Wiring.
But not for what it is.
Well, no, you're building your future-proofing, aren't you?
Yes.
That's the key.
You know, I said to Craig, the current wiring loom is 40 years old and it's been hacked around a little bit for add-ons. He said, yeah, it really, you just can't do it.
No.
I can't do it.
It would be a shame. I know it's not the same as, you know, a small purchase, but spoiling the ship for a hapeth of tar or whatever they say. You've got the
chassis. Never heard that saying in my life.
Have you not?
No.
Look it up. It's quite well.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, it's not well known.
You've got the chassis, you've got the bulkhead. It would be silly to put a 40-year-old loom in it, especially as you're going to, you know, have the paint done nicely and everything else.
Yes. So anyway, yeah, that's where I'm at with that. I've also been digging around for other bits and pieces. So I've now got myself a little stockpile of things that need painting. And, you know, like, heater matrix and all that stuff.
Oh, the heater box, brackets and things.
Brackets. I've got a big old heap of them. A lot of it needs degreasing, but I can't. I've got to that point. I can't put anything back on that's dirty. Or
no, definitely not.
Bit more degreasing to do on the engine, because when I degreased it and washed and cleaned it, it was on the floor, so I've missed loads.
Yeah, it's easily done. There's a lot of nooks and crannies on an engine, isn't there?
But yeah, no, I mean, I said at the beginning, didn't I? This is the year to get that done, and it is.
Absolutely.
Quite charming.
You're making steps in the right direction. It will come together quite
quickly.
Spending
money, I know that.
Yeah, that's part of it, I'm afraid, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, speaking to a mate last night, actually, who's just done his double cab 110.
Oh, right, yeah.
And completely, it was an ex-quarry vehicle. So it's Coniston Green, double cab 110. And they showed me the pictures of the chassis. I've never seen a more rotten one.
Really?
And the reason I mention him is that he's at the point where it's all been re-chassed. Lovely, you made a fantastic job. But he's had a quote for paint.
Right.
And he was quoted £8,000.
Wow.
Which is a significant spend.
Is that for, do you know what paint that's for? Is it Coniston again? Or
no, he showed me an example, and to be fair, I would choose it too. Like a dark red with a black roof.
Okay.
Sort of blingy, make a bit more modern. Because Coniston green and a double cab, it's, you know, it's a period correct colour.
Yeah.
For a year 2000 car.
Tart it up a bit. Yeah. Then. Yeah.
£8,000 is a significant spend. I haven't had a quote for paint yet, but I'm just hoping it's not.
I don't think you're into that. A, you've got less actual acreage to do because it's a naughty and it doesn't have a roof. And B, you're going to go for a flat colour. So it won't be metallic, which is cheaper to buy material-wise, and yours will be supplied to the paint shop in bits rather than giving them a Land Rover and say, please paint that.
Do you know what would be really handy? If people emailed us on editorial at lrm.co.uk, some of their paint finishes, colours, and costs that they paid to paint.
That,
be interested to see.
It's incredibly difficult, as with a lot of things, to quote. But if you've gone through that process, that would be interesting to know.
I'm at that point, I just haven't got,
depends to what level it's going to keep you awake at night knowing how much you've got to spend on having the bodywork done.
Well, what's the most you've ever paid for paint? Have you ever, I mean, I know you
don't have shiny things.
Well, this is the dilemma. So who was I talking to the other day? I was talking to somebody because I went to the 4x4 Expo last
Sunday, yes.
Which, when you listen to this, would have been two Sundays ago.
At Staffordshire Show.
And there was somebody there that had painted their vehicle, but they made it too nice and kind of defeated the object. They couldn't then use it.
Well, it's sort of like what Greg said last week, wasn't it? About how nice do you have... If you make one too nice, you then won't use it. And it's a delicate...
Yeah.
But then again, paint can always be fixed, corrected, polished... There's no need to be that precious about it, especially on a rebuilt vehicle. Do you know what I mean?
But when you talk about rebuilt, can we seamlessly go into feature of the week? I don't know what you've got devised for feature of the week, but you only need to look at the front cover of LRM to this current new issue to know what can be achieved.
100%. As you've beautifully...
I mean, I don't know, was it segued in? I don't know.
I think we've achieved segue. We're number 41 or 42 podcasts here, and we have achieved a smooth segue, I think, although I'm making it less smooth by rabbiting on about it. But so the cover star on this month's Land Rover Monthly magazine is an absolutely beautiful truck cab. In fact, it's a truck cab 90.
It's quite rare to see now.
It is, because more often than not, they're station wagons or soft tops people go for when they do a rebuild to this sort of specification or level, if you like. It is a gorgeous, isn't it? It's really, really nice. And that's done in Rosso Rubino paint, which is a real high-end sort of... I'm not sure if it's a Ferrari colour.
I think
actually.
It is a LaFerrari colour.
A LaFerrari colour. Yes, you're absolutely right. Sorry. And it is. It really... Do you know what? Looking at it in the pictures, it doesn't look that different to Alverstone Red.
No, but I've seen that car in the flesh.
Yeah, and then it would look...
And I saw it in build, actually, which is why I said that probably does need to be on LRM's cover. But when you go up to it, wow, it pops.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I do like Alverstone Red, by the way.
I had an Alverstone Red TD5, and weirdly, that had a galvanised chassis and a black roof, so it kind of looked similar to that, but it looked a lot more used.
Yeah, this is like a work of art, but it really is.
And the main sort of, I guess, the main subject, if you like, of the story and the question that we're asking is Rover V8. How many people are doing rebuilds, doing full resto mod vehicles with Rover V8s in them? Not that many.
Not many, not now.
I can see why they've gone down this route, because it's keeping part of the heritage, the soul of an early 90 like this. But they've obviously made it, you know, they've used a 4.6 instead of a 3.5. It's got a nice hot cam in it. It's got quite a few, like, sort of go faster bits. But yeah, I bet that's an absolute blast to drive. I'm kind of jealous that Alistair went and had a rip in it, but
yeah, no, definitely. What as photos go, that's top draw,
100%. Yeah, I mean, it's really chuffed with how it's come together. The cover is just like so impactful and great. So if you see it on the newsstand, for crying out loud, pick it up and buy it because it's a great read.
Yeah.
Should we roll seamlessly into product of the week?
We haven't done one for a couple of weeks, have we? We've had a couple of guests.
No, indeed. We've sort of had a break from product of the week. Product of the week this week is Scalextric. You love Scalextric. Did you ever have Scalextric as a boy?
Oh, did I? I have still got a picture of me somewhere of when I was 5 years old opening my first Scalextric set.
Oh, we got one brand new.
Yeah. So it was an oval circuit.
Oh, yeah.
With two metros.
I remember that set, yeah.
And then every Christmas, every birthday thereafter, until probably the age of about 14, I would get additional track. I had the not the finest set. It was huge. I had quite a big bedroom, so it used to go under the bed round.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, man. I loved it.
I got my first Scalextric set. It was a house clearance. My dad helped with his mate. He helped a friend clear out a house or something. There was tons of Scalextric track in there. And so that's how I first got into it. But then, like you say, once you've got the bass track, you're always like, oh, looking at different cars and
starting grids.
I had this
smoke thing as well.
Yeah, mine never worked, but I did had like the little solution in the bottle, and you put it down on the track, and it would apparently make smoke and
basically burn oil, didn't it?
Yeah,
it was bad. It stunk.
And like a chicane bit that was smooth, so the cars would like slide on it and stuff.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, do you remember when cars were like 20 quid? You couldn't spend more than, it was like 19.99.
I can't remember how much the cars were. The Metro, I remember the Metros were really light and yeah, they had to fly off the track. And then one Christmas it was a Porsche 911 and it was really quite weighty.
Right.
That thing would just absolutely shunt the Metros off the track.
Because they started putting magnets in them, didn't they? So they stuck.
They were really heavy, yeah. It was really substantial.
Yeah.
But yeah. So what is this product of the week?
Sorry, I digressed.
Yeah.
Well, funnily enough, as we've been talking about, it is a Scalextric car.
Oh, right.
It's a Scalextric version of the Series 1 Huey, Hue 166. You can now get it in 1/32nd scale, as Scalextric cars are. It's got four-wheel drive.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So I've never used a four-wheel drive Scalextric car, but I bet that's a fun little feature, and I bet they handle very differently, I would imagine. And yeah, it's a really nice replica. Lights behind grille, of course. 80-inch Series 1 with the Hue 166 plate and a soft top. And it is £56.99. So a far cry from back when the cars were 40 quid.
They are getting on, but it's one of those things, it's kind of like a collector thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and they do a few different versions of the Series 1 now. So you can collect them all and choose to use them or put them on the shelf because it's a really nicely detailed thing.
Yeah, nice.
Mm. So there's product of the week. We'll try and remember to do one.
Shifted through that quite quick.
Next week. So on my travels recently, I've noticed a few different, a few quite notable Land Rovers that I've sort of gone, wow, I must talk about that on the podcast. The first one was a first edition Range Rover Sport supercharged in Vesuvius Orange. When did you last see one of them?
And Dunsfold got one in that colour.
Yeah. And there's the Range Stormer concept in the British Motor Museum.
Yeah, which it's probably the only ones I spring to mind, but no, I can't remember seeing one.
They're a rare sight.
Yeah.
I remember rare. I'd only just started at Land Rover when they were first coming through as pre-delivery inspection or PDI. And when they got delivered, obviously they've still got all the wrapping on them and like the white vinyl and stuff like that. But when the Vesuvius Orange first editions got dropped off the lorry, I was like, wow. Because first of all, the Range Rover Sport was like groundbreaking in Land Rover terms.
Of course,
like,
yeah.
The first proper performance SUV that Land Rover had done. And the colour when the sun hit it, oh, it just, anyone who has listened to this waffle before will know I'm a huge fan of launch colours. So like the Kallima Lime Green on the Evoque, the Tambora Flame on the Freelander 2, which is kind of similar to Vesuvius. But yeah, Vesuvius Orange on an early Range Rover Sport. I think if one of them come up on eBay, I'd hot find
think
it.
You would? Yeah.
I just really like it.
It's just nice to hear you moving on from L322 chat, to be fair.
I don't know what the launch colour was on L322. I don't know if they had one.
Yeah, I think it was.
Was it Monte Carlo blue? No, that came later.
Exactly. Wasn't it a green colour?
Giverny green.
Yeah.
Like the mild sort of like, yeah, it might have been.
I think it's that.
Yeah, I don't really remember.
We need an expert to get in touch and tell us because that We need to ask Gary. He'll tell us.
Gary will know. But if you know what the launch colour was on L322, or even if they did a specific launch colour, then let me know and I'll put that on my eBay search, saved searches as well.
You know, like it takes us like ages to decide stuff, like when we're planning the next issue of LRM and we might argue about things. I wonder what that's like at Jaguar Land Rover when they're launching a car,
yeah,
deciding on the launch colour.
I bet
it is. That's really quite important, isn't it?
An incredible process to go through, I would have thought.
They'd have to have sort of like, they'd put it to votes, wouldn't they? And they'd say, right, well, because certain cars look right in certain colours and look wrong in others.
Controversial opinion, though. I don't think they worry about it as much now as they used to. I'm willing to be correct.
Yeah, I think behind the scenes, they probably do.
Oh, what, as in? But there's no, like, from memory, there's no, like, Pangea green on the new Defender. I think that's been phased out now, but that doesn't strike me as, like, a real eye-popping launch colour. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but there's probably some psychology over, like, why someone would choose that colour or why they want to launch with something like that.
Probably.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. But certainly that era, like, oh, just look back on that. It was such fond memories, like the stuff, even because they did the first edition Sport in black or Vesuvius. And I don't know why you'd ever choose a black one, because the Vesuvius was just like, oh.
Yeah, my D2 was there, Vesuvius orange.
That would have been...
That wasn't Kinversand, sorry.
Kinversand, yeah.
I'm totally wrong.
Again, yeah. It's kind of a similar colour.
Yeah, it's similar, but...
It's a bit darker, isn't it?
It's a bit darker. It's a bit more than a light. Let's be honest, in England, it doesn't...
Yeah.
Doesn't get that much decent weather, does it? So it doesn't look as good.
Yeah, yeah. But I really like to see them. And you do see the occasional Tambora Flame Freelander 2 around as well. I actually know someone who's got one. But anyway, the other one that I saw that was sort of took me by surprise a little bit was we were going down the motorway and there was what I thought was a Discovery Sport on the inside lane. And as I got a bit closer, I thought, that's too big to be a Discovery Sport.
You normally see Discovery Sports on the inside lane. That's harsh.
Well, only if they're not the bean plate. Anyway.
So I normally see certain, like, modern Landers.
As I got closer, I realised it wasn't a Discovery Sport at all. It was a Discovery 5 that had a StarTech number plate relocation. You ever seen that before?
Yes, I have. Urban Automotive did the first one, I think.
Right, yes.
Centralising number plate.
What do you think to it?
Yeah. I don't know whether I have an opinion. First time in my life.
Have you seen one in person?
Yes.
At first I thought, oh, it's a Discovery. I was quite excited about it.
It's a full fat Discovery Sport because it's centralised.
Yeah, so yeah. It's the size of a Disco 5, but the back kind of does look Discovery Sport-ish.
Yes. I've seen two or three in person.
And I thought...
It's quite a rare sight there.
Yeah, because it was a hellishly expensive option, a hellishly expensive thing to have done, because you have to cut the middle out of the boot. Out of the boot lid.
Yeah.
It's quite an intrusive...
There's more to it than meets the eye.
Bit of surgery. It's an entirely different, like, moulding. And I thought, fair play to whoever had that done, because, as I say, they must have had a strong enough opinion to want to relocate the number plate. Then I thought, I actually think I prefer the original version.
Really?
Because...
So I think JLR are still to this day, with the Discovery 5, made a mistake. I think they should have centralised that.
Do you?
Yeah. So Jerry McGovern, he goes as Jeremy McGovern now, doesn't he?
I don't know.
I think he's, Jerry's not. That's his old name, okay. Jeremy, I think.
Right.
Maybe wrong. Correct me.
I'll send him an email and ask him.
What is your actual name? Anyway, so, yeah, when that first came out, it just looked wrong. And in my opinion, it still does.
Okay.
But there'll be people now driving Discovery 5s listening to this wanting to kill me.
It just
hasn't grown on me. And it's not too... It's not enough to the left... It looks awkward.
If they'd used a square plate, it would have looked better.
Yeah, but it would have possibly been more square and to the left.
Yeah, it would have been. Because if you think about it, Discovery 5 is the first Discovery, full-size Discovery, to not use a square plate. Disco 1, 2, 3 and 4 all had a square number plate.
Yes, they did.
Offset. And to me, that's what makes it look strange, is the fact that it's an oversized rear plate, but it's offset. I actually... I'm... kind of warming to the styling of the Disco 5. In certain colours, it looks right. We're going back to colours again. I think...
dark colours.
Dark blue, black. I'm not a huge fan of black cars generally, but dark blue, dark green, it looks really cool, especially with the right wheels.
Yeah, I agree. And they're quite... well, we've looked on Auto Trader and places like that, haven't we? They're not that bad to the purchase price.
Early ones are coming right down.
Yeah, they are.
Which is kind of cool. If you're in the market for a huge, capacious SUV, the Discovery 5, and you can't quite stretch to a new Defender, Discovery 5, the way to go in the used market. Shall we have a listener's question?
I haven't had one for a while.
Let's crack on. So, this listener, James and Ed, in fact, two listeners in one question. Hi, folks. Absolutely loving the podcast. I've listened to the entire catalogue in a matter of 2 weeks, doing various bits and bobs on my own TD590, old Mercedes E-Class, and my Skoda Yeti. What a fine collection of vehicles. I've serviced the engines on these all three cars for around a decade now, and apart from the odd hex bit that I've dropped into the abyss, all retrieved in brackets, I haven't missed a beat. I can service them every 6 months using top quality oil and filters, and it saves me a fortune over paying someone to do it. I enjoy it, and it has all three running like sewing machines, albeit a bit Massey Ferguson sounding. Well, it is a TD5 after all.
Harsh.
Well, he goes on to say something that Ed Evans said in a recent podcast. Do you remember when we had Ed on?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
About servicing, keeping the Ingenium engine happy, which, funnily enough, we've just touched on. My father's brand new Defender L663, which is the six-cylinder 3 litre, won't see Land Rover for 2 years under their recommendations and would most likely charge a fortune for such a simple interim oil and filter change. And I was also saddened to discover that my Mercedes hadn't received its first service for 26,000 miles after it left the factory.
Well, is that the service intervals on that, do you think?
Well, apparently, yeah, to the first service, which seems incredible. I feel like this modern service schedule ethos is madness, and I would like to take some steps to ensure his new Defender will have a better start to its life. I think that's 100% valid.
Right, so I have an opinion on this.
Go on.
Right, so if you were in the market for the new shape Defender then,
yeah,
that's say 5 years old, would you A, buy one with full dealer service history or one that's been serviced at home?
Yeah.
Because you don't really know. If the service history is a bit sketchy, say if it's the third owner,
yeah,
you don't know what the first owner's done, which one would you buy?
Well, if you're buying it 5 years old, personally, I'd look for dealer history.
And any of the buying guides and any of the things on any car, you'd do that. And do you know what I'd do? I would stick to the Land Rover thing.
Yeah.
In the interim year,
yeah,
you change oil.
Yeah.
But only change it with genuine
parts,
filters.
Oil. I completely agree. And if I know we're not really talking about buying, but if whoever owns it and is selling it has like receipts or photos or notes to back up the fact they've done it interim as well. Oh, brilliant. I mean,
I would keep that paperwork.
Oil technology is obviously tons better than it used to be when we were using crushed up dinosaurs and pouring them into old TDIs and V8s and things like that. But to me, an engine fresh out of the factory to do 26,000 miles in the case of this Mercedes, that's not good.
The thing is, they have done their testing. What the problem is if like a car has, like Ingeniums,
yeah,
has issues and then they retract, you know, like cam belts or something like that, or oil pump belts to 105,000 miles. They go, actually, you need to do it at this many miles now because we've realised there is an issue.
Yeah.
Or the sealed for life gearbox.
Yes, God, yeah.
Yeah, then they go, actually, they are sealed for life, but please, for the love of God, change oil because this is going to go wrong. You kind of have to put your trust in the manufacturer, don't you? To a certain level.
You do, but also if you're spending your hard-earned money on something that you rely on every day, you should take your own steps to it to protect that investment by over-servicing it, I think.
But we've touched on this again before. So a lot of people don't, the way that what people buy cars now, often they'll lease them and they don't actually care.
Yeah, there is that.
Because it's...
they've given it back and it is what it is.
Yeah, if you bought that on finance and there was a service pack on it, you can't convince them to service it any sooner than it's needed because it's on their money.
They wouldn't pay for it.
And then if you get rid of a car, if your intention is to get rid of the car, well, kind of why would you care?
Yeah.
This is the problem.
The other thing,
used car market now.
The other thing to consider, of course, is if you'd, you would have to take it to Land Rover for its at least first and second services, because if you had issues with the engine, it wouldn't be covered under warranty if you took it anywhere else or if you did it yourself. It has to be main dealer serviced for the warranty to not be void if it's engine related trouble.
It's basically you're telling everyone here just to stick with their TDI to do it yourself.
Listen, Steve, I don't think you can.
No, do you know what I mean? Though? It's tricky.
He says, he goes on to say, for an oil service, the L663 looks an absolute dream to work on. The oil filter was right in your face at the top of the engine. There's even an option to do oil extraction through the tube down into the sump to minimise the steps and indeed the mess. I was wondering if it'd be worthwhile replacing the oil the traditional method and replacing the standard drain plug with a magnetic one, if they exist. I dare say you probably could find a magnetic drain plug. I don't know if you'd find it specifically for an L663, but you'd find one with the same thread pitch and length with a magnet, and it wouldn't do any harm, but also the oil filter picks up metallic particles as well, so I wouldn't really think it would make a huge difference in something like that.
How many metallic parts are going to be whizzing around the engine, do you think?
Don't know. Probably quite a few if it's not getting its first service for 2 years.
So I don't know about, when you say about taking oil out the top,
yeah,
I always think, help let gravity take effect and have it out the bottom.
Yeah.
Because you're always going to have residual oil, aren't you, if you're sucking it out the top?
I do agree with you. I think I think draining it traditionally out of the sump plug is the better way to do it.
Because you give yourself some time and just leave it to drip rather than you're never going to get it all out the top.
Yeah, I mean, the tube does go almost to the very bottom of the sump, but like you say, the time that it takes you to wait for the oil to drain properly using gravity out of the sump, you're letting everything come down from like the cam carriers and everything right to the bottom. And in fact, any like little bits of debris at the bottom of the sump are going to come out with the oil, whereas they probably wouldn't get sucked up through the tube, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
The rushing of that hot oil coming out of the sump is always going to take bits of debris and stuff with it.
I think what to take from this is obviously clearly these Land Rovers and these vehicles have been looked after properly.
100%.
Because not many people care to that level, do they?
No, they don't. To sum up then, James and Ed, yes, you're right. He goes on to say the service wouldn't be logged anywhere, but for peace of mind, I'm sure the Defender would appreciate it. And it would be an addition to regular main dealer / specialist servicing.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I think that's...
Yeah, so use the correct oil, use a genuine or high-quality filter. And I would do it personally if it was mine. Because realistically, in the grand scheme of things, oil and filter is a cheap investment.
Yeah, I agree. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, so do that. So, should we have one more before we depart onto other subjects? So, this is actually quite an interesting one. This is from a listener in South Africa. We should have had this listener's question on when Pat was on, because a fellow countryman. He says... hello LRMers, I live in Botswana and I'm the very proud fourth owner of a 1997 Defender 90 with the BMW M52 engine.
We spoke about these just last week.
Pat's an expert.
Yeah.
The rumour is only 650 odd of these were ever made. Despite owning the car for around 5 years, I can't even contemplate life without it. I wasn't looking for a Land Rover when I went shopping for small off-road vehicle. A colleague was selling it and I took it for a drive, and within 3 kilometres of my test drive, I decided I was going to buy it. It was loud and rattly, but it just spoke to me, which no car has ever done. Anyway, back to the point. I definitely feel part of a community when I see another Defender or series and we do the obligatory flash the lights and wave, but I don't know what I'm supposed to do when I see a new Defender.
Okay.
I often find new Defender drivers aren't aware or don't observe the same greeting. Is it me? Should I stop trying? Are these drivers just a different generation? Please help me understand what I should be doing.
Well, Yeah,
it's kind of
so when the new Defender was launched, and I saw a couple, and I was in my old Defender, I would acknowledge it, but the owners just look upon blankly and go, "What the hell? Who are you?" They don't see themselves as enthusiasts necessarily.
It's
Michael.
Yeah, this is it, because a lot of people who own newer Land Rovers also own older ones, but a lot of people who own newer Land Rovers have probably never thought about owning an older one. So you're in, I can see why you're in sort of muddied waters. I always, even like with older Defenders, I tend to err on the side of caution a little bit when it comes to waving, because there's so many people that might be driving a Defender that's a company vehicle, or they might literally use it
like an electricity board or something like that.
Anything. Yeah. And they might not give two hoots whether they've got someone waving.
Farmers in Wales and Land Rovers don't wave back.
There's a guy local to me who still drives a short wheelbase marine blue Series 3 truck cab with a Eiffel Williams on the back, and I've almost gone to wave at him so many times, and I've been like, oh no, that's a grumpy farmer, he won't wave back, and I've retracted the wave. I've gone to put my hand, it's almost reached the screen, and I've whipped it back in because I'm like, no, he's going to think I'm weird.
So I got waves out this morning, and actually in a TD590, you know, the Heritage one, the Heritage Green.
I saw that as well. Yeah, yes.
The, a lady driving it.
Lovely. Lovely.
I was just driving past into town, through town to come here.
Yeah, they're bronze green, aren't they?
It's kind of bronze green, but it's got the five spoke colour coordinated.
Three styles,
yeah. Really, really nice. And she waved. It's like, oh, well, it's up. You know, not. I don't know. New Defenders that wave. I've been in my Defender, and I've waved or put my hand up at a modified Discovery.
Yeah.
And they don't wave back.
Do they not?
Nope.
Mm,
not so sure. Well, the odd one does. But not majorly.
My take on this would be, if they initiate the wave, return it. If they don't initiate a wave, leave it be.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's a safe option for new Defender. I think that's probably the way forward.
Yeah.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own, and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information, or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
Right, so welcome back. So just before we move on to more Land Rover goodness, we're going to talk about, just very quickly, an event that's coming up that we think our listeners might be interested in. So joining me here is Michael from the sister company Warners Group Publications. Michael, what have we got?
Thank you. Well, we've got Campervan Campout Festival, which is our family-friendly festival in Ardingly.
So Ardingly is whereabouts in the UK? Is
it? I don't know. It's about 20 miles from Brighton.
Okay. So it's nice part of the cut there, world, yeah.
Yeah, really nice.
So Campervan Campout is in May, isn't it?
Yeah, 2nd to the 4th of May.
Okay, fantastic. And what's happening at Campervan Campout? Why should someone go?
So there's lots going on. It's entertainment all weekend. We've got music all day, and then we headline, there's we've got Sarah Cox headlining on the Saturday night.
So for listeners that are familiar with Radio 1, is she Radio 2 now?
I think she's Radio 2 now.
Yeah. So more my genre then. So Sarah Cox is headline, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of the music's all around the kind of 90s, early 2000s music. So we've got on Friday night, there's a 90s versus 2000s dance by. And then on the Sunday, we've got Levi Roots, who's doing his reggae band that he's got.
Levi Roots, is he the man that does the reggae sauce?
Yeah. Yeah, there's also a musician.
Dragon's Den. Oh, fantastic. Yeah.
So you've got music, and then there's also lots of other activities going on. We have a large wellness sanctuary. So the Conscious Heart Warriors come and host wellness activities, all free for the weekend, like breath work, meditation, yoga, sound healing, all these different free activities. Then we have our Camp Out Hub, which is our big stage for guest speakers. So there's over 40 talks and workshops across the weekend. We've actually got two stages of talks. So we've got the main camp out hub one, which is more inspiration and workshops. And then we've got a whole self-build stage, which goes into the details about building vans.
Okay, because with the world in the world of Land Rovers, there a lot of people do build camping setups.
Yeah.
So if I've got a Land Rover and a roof tent, can I come?
Yep, everyone's welcome, no matter what you camp in, whether it's a motorhome, campervan, caravan, tent box, or just in your car.
Fantastic. So this is a proper festival vibe. So if I was to camp or come as a day visitor, what are we looking at? What's the cost?
It's £170 for a pitch, and a pitch is two adults and three children.
Okay.
And that includes all the
activities. Up to three, you don't have to have three children. You can have one child or no children. All right, brilliant.
But that's why we kind of do it as a family pitch.
Okay.
And day tickets are from £15.
Bargain. So one of the best things I've heard you say all day is that our listeners are going to get a discount if they book.
Yeah, you can get 50% off day tickets.
That's absolutely amazing. So if you use the code LRM50, you're going to get 50% off day tickets.
Yep, and to see the full list of activities, if they go to campfancampout.co.uk, you'll see all the extra stuff that we've got going on.
Brilliant. Count me in.
I went camping the other day.
But it's February, mate.
No, you still went. It was really good. With the Series 1, 2 and 3 club, just up the road from here, actually. Behind a pub, which was fantastic.
Oh, convenient. So did you actually camp outside or did you stay in a pub?
No, I camped outside in my little cop tent.
Oh, yeah.
Went out, did a load of green laning on Saturday. So Neil actually planned the route. Nice hard base tracks, but, you know, a bit of water here and there. And then back to the campsite for lasagna and some beverages and then slept in the old cot tent.
Is it a pre-made lasagna? Don't know why I need to know that, but was it?
Pre-made as in someone made it, yeah. Okay. It wasn't like a shop-bought one.
Oh, okay.
It was fantastic. Yeah. And garlic bread as well, which was just, oh, you can't have lasagna without garlic bread.
So did you...
We're not going down this road.
What?
I thought you were going to ask what I ate first.
No. Actually, mate, talk about food. I'm really hungry because it's almost lunchtime. How's your Yorkshire puddings going?
I haven't attempted them. I've been a bit too busy with other stuff.
People will wonder why I've asked that question. For anyone that hasn't listened to all of our podcasts, Martin buys his Yorkshire puddings pre-made. Total woman.
Not frozen, fresh, but pre-made. Anyway, the reason I've not had any Yorkshire puddings, I haven't had time to experiment with my recipes, is as viewers of the LRM YouTube channel may have picked up, if you haven't already, a new project has made its way into my life.
It has. So we went and looked at this 110, didn't we? And we did a project buying guide, didn't we?
Exactly that.
So off camera, Martin, we alluded to this last week, didn't we? But you weren't able to unveil the news. Off camera, there I look round and Martin's shaking hands with the man. Like, what? Why did you buy another project?
It was calling to me. And the Series 3 is done now. So if I can find something to procrastinate over, so, you know, I find myself at a loose end if I haven't got something on the go. So I thought, do you know what? This 110, she's bringing back memories of my old G-Reg one I had when I was 18. I thought, this is the car for me. I'm going to have a bit of this.
Because it's a naturally aspirated 2.5 litre, right? That, you know, the sticker, it may be slow, wait till the snow. That suits that car.
I've never seen that sticker. I've seen, you think I'm slow now, wait till I go uphill, which is definitely relevant.
I'm telling you now, I know it's a natural aspirated thing. I know it needs work, but you wait and see how slow that is. You'll be fitting the TDI in it in no time.
No,
let me tell you.
I won't.
Nick, copy my conversion if you want. It'll be flying down the road.
I don't know, honestly. We'll see. We'll see how she goes. I just got to get it. Obviously, we'll be documenting the project on YouTube and we will be doing the step-by-step guides in the magazine for all the recommissioning work, and there's a lot to do.
It's more than you thought, isn't there? There's more than anyone. When you see a project, it's very, very easy to get carried away, isn't it? And you don't actually consider how much time these things take.
That's why it's so important to always have that little bit of extra budget and time on top of the things that you think you've assessed. Because something will jump out and bite you. That's just the nature of the beast. But I'm excited to get stuck into it.
So you've just uploaded the video, haven't you, of you clearing out the back. Which I have to say was quite a smelly experience.
We did a little archaeological dig through the clutter that had become part of this 110 over the 10 years it had been parked up, presumably.
You know that piece of material that we found? Were they underpants?
I don't know. It went straight in the bin, as you might have seen, but it was definitely a stiff piece of I didn't want to even think about.
Our listeners need to go straight to our YouTube, hunt that video out, because I was absolutely in stitches at you cleaning that out.
What caught me by surprise was the front of the Land Rover. When we first went to look at it, I was like, oh yeah, smells just like my old 110. But when we were sorting through, as that rag became more and more visible, the stench got stronger.
What's on it?
I have no idea.
Hideous. But do you remember, like, when we were looking in it, we were obviously being filmed looking in it for the very first time, I have to say, and all I kept doing was sniffing. And I on the YouTube, I'm like, sniffing, this stinks. And you were like, this reminds me of my 90s. This reminds me of my early, and I'm thinking, why, your 110 stunk like this?
I don't think it was that smell I was smelling.
No.
The headline has quite a distinctive...
Yeah, it is a bit...
tang to it. But this rag or cloth or whatever it was covered over with other rubbish, as you'll see if you watch the video. And yeah, it really, it was an assault on the senses, wasn't it? That was uncovered. And yeah, I picked it up and it didn't, luckily I had gloves on. It just stayed in the same shape. So it got slung straight in the bin, which is the right place for it.
So since you've got home then with it.
Yes.
And you've been crawling around in your own time and your own space, have you found much more wrong with it?
The main thing is the footwells. So I inspected it mostly from inside the wheel arches. So looking up behind the inner arches to look at the front of the footwell.
They're like, double skinned, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Do you know, they're double skinned.
You know what you need.
Just like a Series 3 one isn't. So you can see absolutely everything.
Yeah.
So once we got the carpet out, because the previous owner had gone mad with this carpet, which is great in the back because it cuts down on some of the drumming and the echoing, but in the front all it's done is hold water. So the lowermost edge of the footwell where the floor plate screws to it, they've completely gone both sides.
Oh, they always go there.
Yeah, so I knew that the footwells would need work anyway. I've got to take the wings off and have a proper look.
Okay.
Where all the clutch and brake cylinders bolt and things like that. But it'll be fine. It'll come back. It's a doable project. A lot of it is mechanical, which is obviously...
fairly simple.
Nuts and bolts, yeah.
You say that, though. What's your big concern?
My big concern?
Well, what did you find in the back? A lot of?
Ah, yes. There's a lot of... There was more bottles of oil and antifreeze in the back than I would have hoped. Like a lot
oil
of the...
and antifreeze...
Because a lot of people...
empty containers.
Some were empty, some were full, some were halfway between. But like, you might carry a litre of oil as a spare. You might carry a little bit of water in case you need to top up your antifreeze or your screen wash. But there was more in there than I was hoping. So I don't know if that engine either leaks or burns water or oil.
Have you looked up the part number for head gasket by any chance for that aspirated diesel?
Not yet. I'm going to do the bits I know it needs first. And then once it's... roadworthy, I'll be able to test it properly.
It runs fairly well though, when it doesn't it? It doesn't sound like as not as bad as some, but it does sound good.
It does sound quite sweet, and also, yeah. But you never know with a head gasket. Sometimes they only leak when they get up to temperature, which I haven't run it up to temperature yet. Funnily enough, the video that we took, well, actually your son Jensen took it, didn't he? When we were when we went to go and do the buying,
yes, yeah,
of it far being towed behind the telehandler, and then. You know, in gear, because you couldn't, the clutch was seized, so you couldn't disengage the clutch. And it sort of splutters and the wheels are skipping and the bumper's flexing and then it burst into life, didn't it? And you punch the air with...
You know, when I skipped past, like, I skipped past Jensen and I punched the air going, woohoo, yeah. Like this. I didn't actually know he was filming that bit.
Do you regret the fact that you did that, mate?
I regret that not over 90,000 people on social media has seen me skip.
There you go.
And I'm not a skippy type.
Well, you were that day.
Who doesn't love it? Who doesn't love an old nail bursting into life?
It was really, it was a great moment, to be fair, and not one that we expected to achieve because the start motor was really lazy and it hadn't, we'd literally done no prep to try and, we dipped the oil, I think, and that was it.
So some of the comments you've had on Facebook about, you starting that, some people have been concerned. So we address some of them?
If you want to. They were mostly about it being in too low a gear. They were like, oh, I hope that's not in first gear.
Yeah, because of the half shot, you'll be doing half shot.
Yeah, it'll be snapping half. Well, first of all, it wasn't in first gear. It was in second gear, which is the gear I've always used for starting cars.
Yeah, me too.
However, those 110s, especially with that, the naturally aspirated engine, had a really low ratio transfer box, which is why it might look like it's in a lower gear than it actually is. They're a 1.6 ratio transfer box.
Uh-huh, yeah.
No half shafts were damaged in the toaster thing.
Mind you, you were never going to get that running. You could have had the finest battery. That starter motor was...
Yeah, it did need...
It just wasn't...
A bit of love. I have actually put a fresh battery on it. I actually bought a battery and put a fresh battery on it since.
Actual real money?
Well, it came with two batteries and both of them were knackered. So I went out and bought a battery. The reason it's knackered, the reason those batteries were dead will become apparent further down the line. But after a bit of cleaning and a bit of clonking and, you know, tapping the solenoid to break up any corrosion, it does actually start on the key now.
Okay.
Which is a relief because I didn't really want to have to buy a starter motor. But it wasn't in first gear. The bumper is full of holes anyway from where it's had tow balls and lights screwed onto it. So that won't be getting reused. And no half shaft was snapped.
Fine.
The end.
Fair enough.
There is a lot to do. As you will have seen, we cleared all the clutter out and we pressure washed the majority of the like real hard baked. It's like lichen, isn't it? Like algae that was baked onto our bodywork.
Yeah.
That took a lot of scrubbing and a lot of pressure washing and a lot of degreaser and like spray on.
You used bike cleaner, didn't you?
Yeah.
Other cleaner, I mean, I don't know, really.
I don't know what you'd use, because people obviously go mad for snow foam, don't they? But that was literally so baked onto the bodywork. I don't think snow foam would have touched
it. No, the snow foam that I have, snow foam that I put through my pressure washer, little bottle, and that would not have shifted that.
No.
It's great for, like, fresh dirt, because it allows it to run down the bodywork, but that wouldn't have... You needed a chemical, really.
Yeah.
It was a chemical.
Really, what I needed was traffic film remover or TFR, because that really does bite into the worst stuff. But obviously, it's not very good for your paint. But then again...
But you used what you had in the shed.
Exactly that. Yeah. So that was good. And I know it needs an outrigger on the bulkhead, as you'll have seen in the initial video. So I've started stripping down to get to that. Again, we'll be covering this in the magazine and on YouTube, so keep an eye out for that. And of course, buy the mag, because then you get detailed step-by-step how-to guides on how to do all these jobs, as well as, you know, the free content that we give away on YouTube and what we've got here.
And if you haven't already seen the video of Martin clearing the Land Rover out, where you were almost sick.
Yeah, I was, yes.
It was actually, that's the funniest part of the video.
And there's the ultra-satisfying close-ups of the pressure washer taking off, like, strips of this lichen.
Yes.
And that was good. Talking of pressure washers, our friends at Machine Mart have asked us to shout out a few of their bits. So shall we start this month with a pressure washer from them?
Fire away.
If you don't already own a pressure washer, let me tell you, you'll find yourself using them a lot more regularly than just for washing the Land Rover. I know I use mine for all sorts of stuff. And for the price of only £113.99, you can get into a Clark Jetstar pressure washer from Machine Mart.
Okay.
Yeah. This particular pressure washer is called the Jetstar 1950, so-called because it delivers 1,950 PSI, which is pretty decent for something that costs 113 quid, I think you'll agree.
I think that's more than enough power to clean that Land Rover of yours.
Yeah, it would have. I think this is actually delivers 4 bar more pressure than my more expensive pressure washer. So. Okay. If you're sort of on the fence about whether you can justify buying one, this is a brilliant entry point. It's a Clark, so it will come with a warranty. Jetstar 1950, home and light professional use, lightweight and compact, and ideal for many outdoor cleaning jobs. So yeah, it's a 134 bar maximum pressure. It's got an integral detergent tank, so like I could have filled the detergent tank up with the bike cleaner and it would have used it to spray it on.
Okay.
Which would have been handy. And yeah, plugs into a standard domestic socket and comes with obviously your your lance, your pressure lance, and the hose pipe to attach it to the washer itself. What more can you ask for 114 quid?
Does the job. Lovely.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I'll be busting out the pressure washer again to do the chassis. I've already sort of rinsed. I poked the hose pipe up the hole in the front dumb iron to try and, because there's a lot of silt and mud.
That's quite satisfying to do that. Yeah.
So, and a lot of it's come out, but I do need to continue flushing it all out. And then I'll obviously, once the chassis dries out properly, I'll fill it up with rust proofer. And yeah, get the rust done.
At least we're heading into spring, so these jobs, the lighter evenings are upon us.
It's just so much more pleasant.
Yeah, it is.
Working when there's a bit of sunshine and a bit of warmth, and you're not, you know, freezing cold, getting wet, and much like we were doing the Series 3.
Yeah, don't want those days back. So it sounds like I'm going to be coming to your house very soon then to do some more camera work.
Yeah, cameraman Steve. Steven Spielberg.
Cooking a barbecue this time.
Yeah. I'm actually going to invest in a new barbecue, I think.
Are you?
Yeah.
You are coming out at that time of year.
I think I've always been a charcoal man, Steve, but I can definitely appreciate
I'm the convert ease to gas.
Of gas. I think it's going to have to happen this year. I am going to get a nice gas barbecue out for outdoors and have, like I say, when you guys come over and we can crack on with stuff, cook up a bit of lunch.
When we're on the move, when we're at shows and things like that, you just want a quick barbecue and you need to crack on. Sometimes, yeah, charcoal, you haven't got time.
That said,
tend to it.
I think you'll find, Steve, I was I'd got quite good results with my charcoal one at LRM Live last year.
Yeah, no one had food poisoning.
I did ruin the halloumi, though, do you remember?
Yeah, you tried to... You started again, didn't you?
Yeah, with fire lighters.
Yeah.
And made the halloumi taste of paraffin.
That was great halloumi, that was.
Which didn't go down too well with my colleagues, but
no,
I think halloumi was a great rollway, so there's no skin off my nose. Sorry, guys.
So, yeah, so I'll do a couple of days at yours then, and then you'll be back to mine.
You just need to get the bits to turn up and we can start mocking things up on yours.
Yeah. Funny enough, though, going just quickly back to my conversation yesterday with AutoSparks, is a lot of people doing rebuilds leave the wiring to the last bit.
Right.
So the car's all painted, da-da-da-da-da, and people probably don't consider at what point you should order the wiring loom. Because they do them in they make them in batches.
Right.
So because they do all the classic cars and all of the motorcycles, all of that kind of stuff, they build them in batches.
Got it.
Because you imagine the differences in different looms for Land Rovers. There could be, you know, up to 12-week lead time.
Right. Okay.
And it depends where you are in the cycle, so when you need it. So think ahead. Don't leave it to the last minute because it could hinder you.
Yeah. Just
because you can imagine how complex it
must be an absolute mission to make. I know, obviously, wiring loom market for Land Rovers must be quite strong because there are that many being rebuilt every year.
Yes.
But the differences and the variations of each loom, like you mentioned actually yesterday, you can get a chassis loom with or without rear heated screen and rear wiper, things like that.
Two completely different part numbers, you see.
So yeah. You wouldn't necessarily have... If you had one of each on the shelf, you'd have an enormous stock and, you know, you're likely to sell some more regularly than others. And I can imagine it's quite an operation.
One thing that I am doing, I'm going to opt for the one that has got the rear wash wipe and heated screen for the rear. Because if ever that gets converted or if I decide soft top's not for me and I want to go hard top again,
it's there.
The wiring already, you don't have to retrofit. So you might as well have those wires anyway.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
so that's all the advice that, I learned from yesterday's conversation, which is good.
Excellent. Yeah, AutoSparks, they've really got themselves a good name for quality gear, haven't they?
Yeah, definitely.
There you go. You'll have to let me know when it turns up along with your bulkhead and we can start laying things in position. Exciting.
Yeah.
Have you got a tub update or not yet?
No. So work commences on that in the month of March. I know we're in March now when you're listening to this, and by which time I may have an update.
Cool.
But I need to head up there and have a look.
Yeah, that'll be covered on YouTube as well, won't it, and in the mag?
It will indeed, yeah.
Exciting stuff.
So, there's a lot to happen, but
there's
at the moment it's about spending money and waiting for a few lead times. Because not everything is on the shelf.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
yeah.
So it's kind of like just
a bit of a waiting game.
Yeah.
But if you've got a project on the go, actually, that you'd like to share with the the wider Land Rover universe, please do drop me an email at editorial@lrm.co.uk, because every month in the magazine we have the work in progress page where people can show off what they're up to. So if you're bored of listening to us waffling on about the old junk that we're screwing together in our sheds, send us some pictures and a bit of information about yours, and yeah, you could start in the work in progress page, which is always a really popular page.
I really like that page.
It's good. There's a good variety of stuff.
Yeah. And the new issue is quite a young lad, isn't it, doing his?
I believe so, yeah. God, I lose track, Steve. I tell you, I've just got so much.
Well, you're already working on the next issue, aren't we, ahead of time. But yeah, he's only...
I'll be able to share this information with you. Yes, indeed. Joe Pennington, who's in sixth form, is actually... Well, his dad bought it 25 years ago, and he's sort of taking it on as a project of his own. And he looks like he's doing a sterling job. He's working on it outside. He's got like a little tent made up. And yeah, it's all go, go, go for Joe Pennington. So yeah, check that out. And like I say, you too could start in the work in progress page and show off what you're up to with your Land Rover, because we love to see it, don't we?
I do. It's other people's projects that inspire me to do mine.
Yeah, exactly. We're all, and it's great. It's another thing, like I say about going to the spares days and LRM Live, is whenever you chat to people, you see them come back the next year and they've always got updates on what they've been doing. Like, or they might have a freshly finished Land Rover with them that you can go and have a look around, and you're like, you've seen it. You've almost seen that process. Quite rewarding.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I reckon we'll wrap up then till next week. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to wrap up and go get some lunch. It is lunchtime.
Always thinking about food, Steve. I know. What are we on today? Thursday?
Three cake. Well, we've already had one cake, haven't we?
Oh, yeah.
Was our colleague Alice's birthday today?
Yes, indeed. Alice, our ads lady, it's her birthday today, and she brought in cookies.
And donuts.
Yeah.
Of which I may have had one.
Anyway, that's enough about food. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Bye for now.